Welcome to Gospel Tangents, the best source for Mormon history, science, and theology. I'm Rick Bennett. The Mormon Cave, what is it? Well, it turns out that a couple of college students went sightseeing in New York for some Mormon history sites and came across the legend of the Mormon Cave. So it's a very obscure reference, and we're going to talk about it with the amateur archaeologist Casey Kern and Greg Bavone, and we'll get more acquainted with them here in our first episode here. And oh, by the way, if you haven't seen this on YouTube, go to youtube.com/gospeltangents. Casey actually edited this video, and he's added a lot of film clips from the site and from, you know, a lot of amazing video. And so he's a much better video editor than I am, and he put in a ton of hours. So Casey, I can't thank you enough. It's really appreciated. You did an amazing job. So anyway, back to our conversation on the intro to the Mormon Cave with Casey Kern and Greg Pavone. All right, well, welcome to Gospel Tangents, everyone. I've got some amazing guests. I kind of feel like this is Back to the Future a little bit, because I am talking to people. It's Friday night here in Utah, and I'm talking to two people where it's Saturday morning. And so So could you guys go ahead and tell us who you are? We'll start with Casey first.
Sure. My name is Casey Kern. I live in South Korea. I currently work for a tech company. I previously worked for Samsung. That's kind of what brought me out to South Korea. Many years ago, I did serve a mission in South Korea, and that's kind of what got me plugged into Korean things in general. And yeah, I'm really happy to be here.
Yeah, and I'm Greg Pavone, originally from Merrimack, New Hampshire, born and raised there. I am now working and living here in Seoul, South Korea. I'm in the U.S. Navy, so I'm active duty here working as a foreign area officer. Prior to this, I was a nuclear submarine officer in Groton, Connecticut. And before that, New York, which we'll get into a little bit later. And I also served a mission here in South Korea, so grateful for that opportunity that the church provided me, which actually led to my current career. So,
well, now, Greg, I did not know you were from Merrimack, New Hampshire, or as they say, New Hampshire.
That's right.
So I used to go to church at Merrimack High School. I was in the Nashua Ward. I assume you were probably in the Nashua Ward.
I was,
is that right?
Yeah, yes. Yes.
Okay. So, were you there when, this is going to definitely date me. When we built the ward, the building, okay, this was before the church had the building fund and everything. My mom made corn dogs, which nobody in New Hampshire had ever heard of corn dogs. And we did fundraisers to build the Nashua building. And it was, I remember at the time, it was the largest building in, I think they said New England, but for New Hampshire for sure. And so were you living there back then? Does that ring any bells?
So I was born in 88. So.
Oh, no. Yeah. You're much too young. I think we built that building in 1980. So.
Okay. Yeah. It was before my time.
And you probably had no idea that we met at your high school then, if you're from Merrimack.
No, that's again, before my time.
Wow. That's really interesting. So very cool. We might have to play the Do You Know game after the interview. I won't bore everybody else here, but that would be interesting to see who's still left there. So, yeah, I lived there from 78 to about 82. So,
what a small world.
Yeah. So, did not know that. That's awesome. All right. So, I always like to get a little background from my guests. We'll go back to Casey, I guess. Give us a little bit of your educational background, and how did you become the Indiana Jones of the Mormon world?
I did an undergrad at BYU in information systems. So, you know, this was technical and business fields, really nothing related to the humanities or to history, or certainly not archaeology. I worked in consulting, doing systems integration consulting for some time. I did go to business school, and had some had some time to, you know, learn some new things and expand horizons there. But again, that was all kind of in business and technology and international relations and those kinds of things. I guess the I've always had a very keen interest in the Book of Mormon. I see it as a force to be reckoned with. And, you know, a lot of my just kind of hobby type interests and side projects have been focused on trying to study and make sense of that book, of what it says and everything related to it, which includes its coming forth. And so, you know, I've just kind of always had a sideline interest in just kind of keeping up on things and finding where the holes are and trying to see what research can be done in those areas that have been underserved. So yeah, I guess we'll get more into the Indiana Jones type story a little bit later. But I think we should say up front that neither Greg and I are scholars by any means. We're both educated in I guess that sense that we've both been to grad school. We do we both have written academic style material, but again nothing related to history or archaeology. Greg had done some research in North Korean economics and commerce. Did a master's thesis on there. I do have a peer-reviewed paper in the public record, but again, it's about Wikipedia interactions and things like that. So my academic credentials in the field are more or less non-existent. We're very much amateurs on the history and archaeology side, but you know, it's definitely a work of passion and of interest. If you'll indulge me just a moment, although I don't see myself as a historian at all, I do have I do see myself as somewhat of an archivist. That primary sources are very important to me, and when I find primary sources that haven't been used or are not accessible in proper ways, I feel like that should be corrected. So I do have a book that I did self-publish. It's called The Journals of Jacob Gates. This is an ancestor of mine. You can buy this on Amazon. Also, it's at Benchmark Books. What it is just a series of journals, mainly from his mission. Jacob Gates was an early church member. He was baptized by Orson Pratt, and you know, kind of lived through the Missouri and Nauvoo periods, and then did a bunch of missions in England. So those are primary sources are now available, and you know, certainly welcome any interested researchers to kind of use this resource as kind of a definitive source to. That's also very accessible and easy to read. You don't have to decipher handwriting because it's all been transcribed. I also have a different book of letters that my great grandfather wrote from World War I. Here we go. Thanks. The Alfred Curran Letters from the First World War. Again, kind of a primary source, written without much commentary, but an interesting just piece of documentation of this is how an LDS farm boy from Idaho was processing and you know, the events of the war and kind of getting enlisted. And so you know, I do kind of have a side interest in the hobby side of history and documentation and the historical sources and whatnot, but you know, by and large, still very much on the amateur side.
A talented amateur.
Thank you.
All right. So Greg, tell us about your background.
Yeah. So after graduating from high school, I went to the U.S. Naval Academy in Annapolis, Maryland for 2 years. After my sophomore year, I chose to disenroll. You actually don't commit to the Navy until you start your junior year. So after my sophomore year, I disenrolled and had to serve my mission here in Korea. So I came to Seoul for 2 years.
Did you guys know each other?
No.
Did you serve at the same time?
No. We missed each other by a couple months or years.
Yeah. I was here 08 to 2010. And then I went back to the Naval Academy, graduated in 2012. And then that fall of 2012 is where Casey and I met each other. I was pursuing my master's at Harvard Kennedy School up in Cambridge, Mass. And Casey and I were roommates at that time. So
that means you're both Red Sox fans, right? And Patriots?
I'm a big Red Sox and Patriots fan, yes.
I kind of have to get on the bandwagon, but yeah, definitely fans at this point.
Yeah. So then I was we did the two-year master's in public policy there, a phenomenal experience. And Casey and I will get into maybe more some of the big questions we were asking each other at those times about all things, including religion and our spirituality. And then after graduation from there, I started the Navy's nuclear power pipeline. So that involves, so before you serve on a submarine, you have to learn the academic and technical fundamentals of operating a naval nuclear power plant. So this is 6 months in South Carolina of nuclear power school, 6 months in upstate New York, which we'll get into, I think, later, where there's a prototype nuclear reactor that they train new recruits on. And then I was in Connecticut for my submarine sea duty, Groton, Connecticut. And then I did shore duty in Japan, and then came lateral transferred to foreign area officer, and then recently came to Seoul. About a year ago, came to Seoul, Korea.
Wow. How long do you plan to be stationed in Korea?
About a three-year tour, yeah. I'm a liaison to the Korean Joint Chiefs of Staff right now.
Oh, wow. Very, very cool. So I've been talking with Casey. I know Steve Shields, he was a guy I interviewed, served an LDS mission and then an RLDS mission for the Community of Christ. And he's in Korea right now too, in Seoul. So writes for a newspaper there. So
we'll have to look him up. Go say hi.
Yeah.
So, well, fantastic. Well, of course, I think the claim to fame here is the so-called Mormon cave. And so can you tell us, I remember Casey wrote in a blog a while back about this discovery, but how did you guys find out about this Mormon cave? You know, what is it? Give us background, because I think most people have never even heard of the Mormon cave. So how did you come across it? And then go ahead and talk about that.
The story of, or what we know about the cave and how we came across it are kind of intertwined. So we can, you know, maybe start at the beginning, as all good stories do. And so as Greg mentions, he and I were roommates or housemates in Cambridge. And, you know, we were both in grad school programs that kind of covered the same two-year period. And grad school is often a time that, you know, you have your schedules a little bit different than a typical job, and you have time to think about things and process things, and you're, you know, developing you know, thinking skills and research skills and things like that. So, you know, it's not uncommon for a lot of people just to start, you know, talking about the big questions and trying to sort things out and challenge assumptions and things like that. So anyway, Greg and I were just able to have just a lot of conversations where, you know, we can say, well, what about this and what about that? And like, what does this really mean? And, you know, those kinds of questions. Yeah.
And then that led us to, so I had about a month of leave before I started nuclear power school. So June of 2014, we did a road trip, and I would call it an unconventional church history tour. Is that
sure,
fair?
Sure. Unconventional in the sense that we did a lot of off-road site seeking. as it were. I had this book, I don't even know what the name of it was, but it had directions to all of these kind of these places that were off the beaten path, like Hiram Smith's birthplace, which is just this random farm. There's just a scarecrow now. There's nothing else to see.
Yeah, so we started, that road trip started in where we were in Cambridge, and then we went north to New Hampshire, into Maine. We did Vermont. We went west to New York, and then we made it all the way to Ohio, to Kirtland, and that's when we turned around and then headed back home. And I mean, we hit a lot of the sites, like Joseph Smith's birthplace, of course, and where the Joseph Smith's leg operation occurred.
which is a Taco Bell right now.
It's a Taco Bell, Lebanon, New Hampshire. Yeah, and being from New Hampshire, it was close to home for me, so I like that.
And so, you know, as we were preparing for this, I kind of got this big binder full of articles and stuff. Even if I hadn't, you know, read it thoroughly, I'm just like, just print off anything we got, you know, anything that's related to New England or New York, and we just kind of had this binder. And as we were driving, you know, as we were driving through Maine, we were reading these early missionary accounts of them kind of going up the coast of Maine. And so we were kind of at various points just kind of trying to relive, or at least kind of look at the scenery and being like, hey, this is where it was all happening.
Yeah. And of course that brought us to Palmyra, New York. And in Palmyra, one of the authors that we were reading his material was Dan Vogel. And he had done a lot of research and on Joseph Smith's early dig sites. So we were sort of reading this and we were wondering, I wonder if we can find some of these locations.
Yeah, this article, it was a dialogue article, I think from 1994. And he actually has maps in it and stuff. And you know, the land plots aren't that big, relatively speaking. And you know, so it was like, well, we can at least make an effort to try to see where this could have been.
Yeah. So in addition to the main, like the Smith Farm and the Sacred Grove and the temple, I think one day we were just reading and saying, hey, this looks like it's about here. And that led us to, so it was right behind where the current temple is, to a local's house. And we said, hey, we're going to have to go, let's knock on the door. Let's knock on the door essentially and see if he'll let us look around.
Yeah, there was a description of a hill and in the article it was called Old Sharp. So we're just like, okay, we got to find Old Sharp Hill. And we could kind of see, you know, the temples, there was the temple, then there was a, you know, a residential house, and it looked like the hill was somewhere in between. So, you know, we could just kind of just like, well, how do we get there? There didn't seem to be an access road or anything. Just like, well, let's just go ring on the doorbell and see if we can get some directions.
Yeah.
Wow.
Like, it seemed so natural for us to do. I mean, it was almost like we were back in missionary mode. It's just like, you know, talk to everyone, like, who?
Yeah.
But we later kind of got the sense that the locals and the tourists are kind of really two different worlds there in Palmyra. But we were happy and to be a part of bridging it to some extent.
Wow, that's funny. So was he friendly with this guy that you knocked on his door?
So it was a little intimidating at first. He was kind of came across as an old crotchety gentleman. And I was a little intimidated, but he let us in. He let us in and he ended up being very friendly.
I should add that when we knocked on the door, he didn't come to the door. He just yells from the back and says, come in. So we just kind of start stepping into a stranger's house. We still can't see his face. And then, you know, I think he's sitting, you know, in his chair with the newspaper and kind of looks over it.
What is it, you boys want?
Well, we said, hey, you know, we're doing a little research. We're looking for, you know, this hill called Old Sharp. And then he kind of looks up and he's like, you two Mormon? and we're like, yes, you know, and we're you know, trying to follow the trail of Joseph Smith here.
Yeah.
And then and he was quite a character. And then he said, and he said, we're looking for Old Sharp. He's like, I'll tell you one thing. Joe Smith was digging back in those hills.
Yeah. And he actually ended up, he claimed that Joseph Smith, that the hill we were on was Old Sharp, which is his property, and that Joseph Smith had dug on his property. And he said, I can prove it to you. And we went out back and there were indeed impressions in the ground, and then next to the impressions there were large piles of dirt. he claimed those were dug by Joseph Smith.
Wow. Well, that's very interesting. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, we find, you know, some of the sites that were mentioned at Old Sharp, we do identify a hole. And then at that point we're just like, hey, cool. But we had not read, so I was just kind of reading the article as we were moving through it. I hadn't read the second part of the of the article yet.
This is Dan Vogel's article you're talking about.
Yes. And then the cool thing was, standing in his driveway, we looked at Dan Vogel's article and said, Dan Vogel stood here in this picture. This is where this picture was taken, from this gentleman's driveway. So we matched what we saw in the article with where we were at that time.
Oh, so Dan had kind of done some legwork for you guys before. So that's why this guy knew all about Joseph Smith.
So he published it in 1994, but I think early 90s is when Dan was going around these parts and trying to figure it out. So, you know, we really can't claim to be the first to have done this.
Agreed.
We're just more the most recent, but yeah, you know, a lot of the research that we ended up doing was really just based off of and building upon what Dan Vogel and then another newspaper archivist, Dale Broadhurst, they were really the champions of the sources that helped us make sense of this.
Oh, wow. I need to get Dale on. Is he still alive? I know he's getting up in years.
I exchanged emails with him briefly a few years ago. I haven't heard from him since.
He's Mr. Spalding theory, as I recall, right?
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Right, but he's done a tremendous work in collecting and transcribing old newspaper articles, and that's been that was very interesting.
So anyway, while we're on this gentleman's property, he said, "Have you boys heard of the Lost Mormon Cave?" And we're like, "No, I hadn't," and
I hadn't either.
And he said, "Well, back in 1963, when I was 19, some young kids in the neighborhood came up to me and they said, 'Sir, we found the Lost Mormon Cave.'" And they brought him to the site, which is just down the road from where we were at this time. And he said it was like going into a woodchuck hole, where you have to, it was a small hole in the side of the hill. He said, I had to scrunch my body into it. It went down a little bit and then it came up. And he said at that time it opened up to a huge cavern, a cave. And that was obviously very surprising to us and exciting. And that led us, the very next page of the article started.
Yeah. Yeah. So then I literally turned the page and if we had kept on reading, we would have, you know, kind of gotten that part of the story, but we heard it first from the local who had this experience with it. And, you know, he kept on saying, "Oh, this is Joe Smith's cave." And so, you know, trying to make sense of that, how does this all fit together? Very, very confusing. But then once we start, you know, reading the article, the pieces start coming together. He did tell us though that there was pretty much, you can't find the cave now. He's like, it's, you know, the brush is too thick. He told us generally where it was on the hill. And there were some descriptions, you know, it's, you know, about X meters from the top on the west side and things like that. So, you know, we could go onto Google Maps or Google Earth and kind of get a sense of where it was. Mm-hmm. But he told us, it's just like, no, you can't go in there now. It's all, you know, piled up with dirt and brush is over it. And
yeah, there's nothing there anymore.
He's like, abandon all hope of ever finding it. So of course that's a challenge, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, we kind of drive down the street and try to identify where the hill was. And it's a pretty significant sized hill.
Yeah.
So kind of hard to miss, but then we go on drive to the house that was there, and again we see the same picture that Dan Vogel had taken a picture of.
I remember that.
Yeah. It's got a truck and the house and the hill, and we're just like, this is it, and then so we go ring the doorbell, but nobody was home.
So this is a different house.
This is a different house,
right down the street.
Yeah, it's a small neighborhood, but yeah. So nobody was home, and we just kind of had to leave it at that. We had a general sense of where the cave would be in relation to the hill, but we had the challenge, like, nobody can find us anymore. It's completely lost. And you know, that was just kind of like, we got to get to the bottom of this. We can't just drop this here. But as far as that trip was concerned, we kind of left things there. We ended up, you know, going to Kirtland and coming back, but then when we returned, like, this was a loose thread
it was
that we had to solves.
So Palmyra was one interesting stop on this whole trip. And we at that time, though exciting, we weren't going to stop the rest of the trip just to pursue what we weren't sure was there, but what hoped was there. So
yeah,
never met, got, didn't get a chance to meet the owner at that time, and continued our trip, went home. Again, this is June 2014. Fast forward, the next month, I moved to South Carolina to start nuclear power school. Casey moves to North Carolina to start for your first job at a grad school.
You were in Charleston, I suppose.
Yeah, yes, exactly. Yep.
I served my mission in South Carolina. Wow, that's funny.
Goose Creek specifically, but yes.
Yeah, Goose Creek, yeah, okay. I never served there, but yeah, I served all over South Carolina, but not Charleston, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's a beautiful city. And then in, so that's again, that's June of 2014. In late January 2015, I then finished nuclear power school and moved to Ballston Spa, New York, near Saratoga Springs, to start my nuclear prototype training up there, which is again another 6-month course. So that puts me back in the neighborhood of New York. And meanwhile, Casey had moved to South Korea, and he started doing he did the academic and research side of the house, where he started researching all references to cave, Lost Mormon cave, Joseph Smith digging, and really tried to find out from, again, primary sources and otherwise, is this real? Is there anything to this?
Yeah, so you know, in sorting through all the sources, I just kind of wanted to do a full inventory just to have it all out there. And again, I was mainly just looking at the footnotes of Vogel and Quinn and then another category of articles related to Kimura's cave. And that was kind of a confusing thing, because you may be familiar with, there's some statements that talk about Joseph and Oliver kind of enter this cave in Kimura, and there's all these records and things like that. It's really hard to try to make sense of, but it mentions a cave in a hill in the vicinity. So I gathered all of those too. Anything related to a cave, even if it's kind of misidentifying or referencing a different hill. Because we should note that the location of this is not the Hill Kimura or Gold Bible Hill, later known as Kimura.
How far away is it from Hill Kimura, would you say?
Well, about a mile.
Mile or two.
It's pretty much due east of the Smith farm, which is about 2 miles north of the Hill Kimura. So
yeah, right down the road.
Yeah. It's all in the neighborhood.
And Casey kept me updated on what he was finding, and the more he dug, no pun intended, the more excited I think we both became in that, whoa, this story keeps getting corroborated and corroborated and corroborated. It seems to be that there actually is something there. This is not just some old crackpot, the local who told us about it, making up a story. There actually, it seems to be that the research has suggested there is a cave there.
I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Casey Kern and Greg Pavone. In our next conversation, we're going to talk about who likely dug the cave and when it was likely dug.
So they start digging, and Lorenzo Saunders, he's in 1822, he's about 11 or 12 years old. And he says that he sees Joseph Smith Sr. and Alvin, and then later Willard Chase is also mentioned as having started the dig. And the date, we can date it because he mentions in the same breath that this was the summer before Alvin died. And Alvin died in 1823 in November. And so that summer kind of places a time frame for where this dig would have started and who might have been involved.
If you'd like to hear the entire interview uncut, please subscribe for just $5 a month at patreon.com/gospeltangents, and you can hear the entire interview before everybody else. If you'd like to watch the entire video for just $8 a month, you can either subscribe on YouTube, Patreon, or my website, gospeltangents.com. Just click the yellow subscribe button, and I'll add you to our Gospel Tangents Insiders group so that you can see entire videos. For those interested in a PDF transcript, you can subscribe at either Patreon or on my website. for just $10 a month, I'll send you a PDF as soon as it's complete. If you'd like a copy of the paperback as well as a PDF, just sign up for $20 a month at either Patreon or my website, gospeltangents.com. Of course, you can buy individual transcripts at amazon.com and just do a search for Gospel Tangents interview and you can see all the things that we have there. Don't forget to support Gospel Tangents with an awesome t-shirt like one of these. You can subscribe at Apple Podcasts at tinyurl.com/gospeltangents. Get our latest updates at facebook.com/gospeltangents. Also, you can get our Twitter updates at Gospel Tangents. Click here to subscribe, here for a transcript, and over here we've got more of our great videos. Thanks again.